Hello and welcome to the Feverbee podcast. My name is Katie Kobe and I'm head of training here at Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Feverbee podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for free updates and review our show notes to get all of the resources mentioned in the podcast today. Show notes are published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. I am so excited to introduce our guest today. Sarah Judd Welch is CEO and head of community design at Loyal, a community development studio based in New York City. Prior to Loyal, Sarah worked on community with TaskRabbit, Contently, Kick, and Catch a Fire. And in former lives, she also worked with Hillary Clinton and Goldman Sachs. She believes that the community is the future of society and economy on the internet. And I am so excited to have her here with us today. So thank you, Sarah, for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Katie.
Absolutely. You were actually requested by Jen Petey in one of our earlier episodes. And so I like to be able to reach out to different people at the request of different guests. It's just great to get a good perspective. So, we were talking and doing some preparation for the show today. We decided we are going to cover the topic of selling the value of online community internally. That's not a topic that I've actually covered in the podcast or that I cover in any of my trainings. So I think it'll be really great to get some of your perspective on that.
I'm excited.
To kick us off, I guess, what is the first thing that you should do once you realize you need to sell or even resell the value to your leadership team? I sort of feel like having to resell is something that comes up if you've got organizational changes or anything like that. But what do you do first when you realize like, now I've got to go back in and kind of go to bat for myself and what I'm doing?
It's such a tough situation. For myself, I've actually only been in this position through Loyal with clients, mm-hmm. either selling into a leadership team for the first time or in the middle of the project having to resell in. And I've had numerous friends who've had this experience in-house at a company while working on community. And it's very challenging because it rocks you to your core. You know, it kind of conflicts with what you might believe in and is good for both the company and the world.
Right.
But also it makes you feel really insecure in your job, and that's never a good feeling. And you know, you don't really perform well when you don't feel good in your job and you feel really negative about it. And if you already feel undervalued, it just becomes even that much more difficult to sell with confidence.
Right.
So what I always tell people is like, you know, the first question I ask is, you know, what does your leader actually value? Is it the analytics? Is it sales? Is it growth? You know, all those things can have such different impacts on your role. Mm-hmm. And I always encourage my friends and my peers to realign their strategy and how they communicate what they're doing with those goals and with that lens. So you really need to understand like what the leadership already values and what they believe it makes them a strong business, and then frame community around that lens. Sometimes, of course, though, there's no real resolution. Mm-hmm. Like maybe they just don't value customers at all. That's such a bad situation to be in.
Yeah. Such a bad situation. It's the worst situation.
I know. I think in that scenario, there's not really much more you can do than walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And no one wants to do that, but you know, not only is it not good for the community itself, but it can be really damaging for community managers personally. You know, community managers are so prone to burnout. We tend to invest a lot emotionally in our work, and we need to be protective of ourselves.
Yeah. So I absolutely agree. I think aligning to goals is probably one of the most critical things. And one of my next questions for you is like, what are some things that you should know about your senior leaders before you go into it? And obviously knowing their goals is a big one, but I guess now I get to reframe that question. How do you go about finding that out? I mean, like, what do you do? Like if you know, for instance, that say you're like, I don't know, head of marketing or head of PR is someone who is just, you just know through the grapevine that they're like not into community and you obviously need them bought in. How do you go about finding out, you know, what their goals are and what you can do to get on that same page with them?
It's a good question. Well, just like what you said, hearing through the grapevine is definitely helpful. You can also ask your colleagues or maybe someone else who works closely with them.
Mm.
Sometimes, though, you got to make some leaps of faith. So generally speaking, in my experience, the larger a company is, the more disconnected the senior leadership is from their customers and community at large, mm-hmm. and the less level of detail they know about their business in general. They mostly want to know that everything is good and we're on the right track strategically, and how it all gets done is not as important to them because it's not their job to worry about that. Mm. And in that scenario, when you present a strategy to them, you do want to be very simplistic in your ideas and not present too much detail. Particularly in startup culture, we're used to being incredibly execution oriented. And so when we want to create a new plan of attack or a strategy, we outline specifically how we're going to execute in every detail and why those details matter. But most senior leadership don't really care to know those kind of details. So presenting and framing big ideas strategically without getting too much into the details, I've found to be very successful. But also knowing whether or not you need to root your argument in data versus emotion. Mm. And that I think is a very hard thing to find out, like which is going to be the compelling argument for someone. Mm-hmm. So generally when I'm going into those scenarios, I try to present both data arguments and emotion arguments side by side. And then depending on how they react, I'll like reframe quickly. It's like a, you know, a test, A-B yeah. testing.
Exactly. You're A-B testing right on the fly. That's kind of amazing. That is key. That I think that's something that everyone always tells you to go in like with the data, right? It's important. You yeah. absolutely should. People should be making a lot of database decisions. But it is very, very critical, especially when you get to people at that level, that sometimes the emotional side of it is really what wins deals and it's really what wins doors. I mean, we all know that relationship selling is a really big thing that mm-hmm. I think there's like this old adage. It's like most of the deals made are like made on the golf course, you know, and it's really just like underlying the concept that it's like it's about relationships and like that human emotion that you can inject into it. So I think that was a really, really great point to bring up.
It's also, I don't know, I hate the notion that deals are closed on the golf course. You know what I mean? Right. It's such like a
– it sounds like an old boys club comment.
Yeah. Oh, man. That kind of gets to me. But it's so true. So not only is it dependent that you have good relationships mm-hmm. with your senior leadership up front, but that you're also able to figure out how their heads work.
Yeah, absolutely. I've actually found too and it sort of depends also on the size of the organization and how much access you have to people. Like obviously mm-hmm. bigger companies, you're not going to have access to as much people higher up. But I mean, if you're lucky to have access, you're in a smaller company that's more accessible, taking people out to coffee, like even before you know you need to sell, or even if you know you need to like resell to them, take them out to coffee just to get to know them a little mm-hmm. bit better and who they are as people. Like, don't go into that first conversation with this objective of like, okay, I'm going to get you to say yes to everything I need you to say yes to. Just recognize and realize 100%. that our senior leaders are also human beings as well. And they all have good days. They all have bad days. And so sometimes they appreciate just like a conversation and getting to know someone a little bit better. And I've found in my past that that has worked out pretty well to my advantage.
Yeah. And also if you can find out, you know, is there something personal in their life that you can share as an analogy? Like mm-hmm. if someone is a father and their son is sick, you might be able to allude to some example that would seem like a compelling benefit to him in light of that situation. So like figuring out what are their personal details and what kind of stories would speak to them yeah. and leverage that. And that sounds a little bit manipulative, but
something I'll call out. So I did this at Sprint last year. We did this mm-hmm. workshop on influence and relationships. And there is really a fine line between the concepts of influence and manipulation. But I would say that the difference that I've read about and that I believe is that if you go into this situation with like a pure heart and good intentions, it's influence. It's only really manipulation if you're going in there with like this, maligned intent to like do something that's like not beneficial for the company as a whole, or something that is like, you know, not beneficial to people involved. But really, if you're going into it with good intentions, then you can most likely look at it as the concept of influence and building your mm-hmm. own influence in your network.
That makes me feel a little better.
Yeah, totally. No, I use the example. I actually put up a picture on the screen of like Frank Underwood, and then I put up a picture of Bruce Wayne from, you know, Batman. And it's like, you look at Bruce Wayne, it's like, everything that he does is for like the greater good. Like he's always got this intention, like all of his influence. Sometimes the shots he takes can be a little cheeky, but everything he's doing is just for like the greater good of, you know, pushing his city to be better. Whereas when you look at Frank Underwood, it's definitely not that. And
it's really funny though, because I actually, I want to be Claire Underwood when I grow up.
Don't you? I mean, I rock but her haircut a nicer all the time. One. Yeah, and of course we're talking about the Underwoods from House of Cards. Sorry, I didn't mention that for anyone who isn't a House of Cards fan. But yeah, there's just a difference, I think, when you go about – I mean, the whole world operates on relationships and influence, mm-hmm. but it's how you approach it. If you're, you know, being right. positive intent, or if you know you're going into it and what you're doing is not good, like it feels shady for a reason because it is, basically.
It's 100% true. Yeah. You'll know in your gut when you've stepped over the line.
Yes, absolutely. Very true. So we've talked a little bit then about communicating with senior leadership and how it's different, like you looking at like data and big picture arguments. One of my former VPs or VP of sales, he would always say like, I'm all about the number. My like number one goal every quarter is just to hit that number. So if you can frame whatever you're going to do towards me hitting that number, it's a lot easier for me to understand and digest and support. Right. Are there any other sort of, you know, unique aspects about communicating with senior leaders? I think that, you know, sometimes people just get really overwhelmed, especially again, like the bigger organization that you're in, but maybe like a little overwhelmed or starstruck or just completely nervous about talking with them. Do you have any other tips there?
I think you really need to pull in relevant examples mm-hmm. that can explicitly show both with data and emotion how community can impact your company. Mm-hmm. Like for example, you could show like the attrition rate of new customers when their support tickets take 24 hours to be responded to versus 4 hours. Mm. You know, like that data can be very hard to find and mine within some companies. But if you can come in with hard data and a personal story from your company, not just like examples from another company, that can be very powerful too.
Yeah, totally agree with you. I think case studies will only get you so far. I think they're useful Agreed. For like spurring ideas, but when it comes down to actually, you know, doing it, there's no company out there that's exactly a copy right. and paste image of another company. So all of the results are going to be different.
Definitely. 100% agreed.
So then what do you think are some of the, I guess, bigger misconceptions that like leadership teams have about the value of communities themselves? I almost wonder if maybe if you could go in and like almost nip the problem from the bud in yeah. a way, if maybe that could help in terms of, you know, whatever work you may have to do with selling or reselling mm-hmm. down the road. But what do you think some of those misconceptions are?
Well, I can tell you this from experience with the different types of leads and outreach we get to Loyal. Mm-hmm. Some of the requests that people ask us for, they always assume that we're a social media company. Mm. They think that community is a cost center and that community management is a role for junior people. So they expect that Loyal's team is made up of like, you know, 22-year-old girls who don't really know anything about business. Awesome. Like that's their conception of Loyal.
Great.
But like,
right.
If they haven't like checked out our website or if they're just like meeting us at a conference, like their perception of what we do is so different from actuality. Mm-hmm. The social media one is one that I see changing. Most large companies today have social media agencies and they usually will know once they've been working with their agency for a couple of years and they're looking for like that real community, they like see what those limits are with social media. Some social media agencies are really good at this. Some are not. Mm-hmm. But you know, at the end of the day, social media is a tool. It's not a strategy in and of itself. Mm-hmm. So for example, when we worked with GE, GE had already been working with VaynerMedia. They had already been working with a PR agency, a media buying agency, and they knew that they needed something different and special to handle an upcoming challenge. Mm-hmm. So they knew they needed an actual community strategy as opposed to just hiring like a social media agency. But that I would say that that's probably one of the biggest education hurdles that we come up against at Loyal. Mm-hmm. The way that I explain that to people is that I usually will use an analogy, and I'll say something to the effect of social media is to community as graphics is to design.
Ooh, that's a good one.
So, like, we all know today that design is so much bigger than just graphics. Mm-hmm. It's the way something looks and it feels and it works. And graphics are just one really small tip of the iceberg part of that. And mm-hmm. That's the way that I look at social media too, in relationship to community. And once you can get to that point across to someone, usually there's like a light bulb moment in their mind when they mm-hmm. they understand that there's something else there that they haven't been getting that they could take advantage of.
Mm-hmm. That is such a great, like, I'm like, I want that in a poster. We could sell it. We'll
spread the word.
Yeah, we'll create a little like loyal shop site and put it on there. No, that's a fantastic analogy. And I mean, the misconceptions are huge. And I think part of it is, like, as we were talking about earlier, once you get higher and higher and higher up in an organization, you have a little bit less touch with a lot of the day-to-day things that are happening, a lot of the day-to-day interactions, you know, the tactics that are actually being used to push the organization forward. And I think that even a lot of the strategies too, like community, tend to get lost in the mix. It's like, I know I just need to get to endpoint B. I don't care how we get there, just get me to endpoint B. And so it can be very easy for people to, you know, think it's just like this thing that, you know, they've read about in a magazine while they're at the airport waiting for a flight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also I found that, you know, working in companies that give you the freedom to take community the way that you are, the way that it is, and that allow you to kind of take it and shape it the way that you want to be, I've found that just by having people like watch really good community managers in action, that also is very much like a light bulb moment. It just becomes something where they're like, oh, it's not that. Like it's something completely different.
Right.
You know, and it's your, and all of a sudden that communication between the community back up to the leadership team and back and forth becomes very, very, just much more visible. And I think.
Right. Much more clear.
Yep.
One caveat though, mm-hmm. is that you will sometimes see communities undertaking community strategies that are nice and have like general value, you know, like warms and fuzzies and deep relationships,
mm-hmm.
but there is no actual business value in the community, and mm-hmm. that is always a very hard sell.
Mm-hmm.
When you're creating your community strategy, you really need to align your community goals with your business goals and make sure that like every tactic backs up to a larger business objective. Otherwise, in your leadership eyes, it doesn't really matter if you're creating all of this great social community value if it doesn't actually add any business value.
I swear you just completely like taught one of the lessons from my training course. It's so true though, because it's like you have to, I mean, if it doesn't ultimately come back to like saving money or mm-hmm. Reducing costs, then and there's ways to saving money and reducing costs is the same thing, my bad. I mean, earning more money or reducing costs. And there are ways to earn more money and reduce costs without being, you know, super shallow.
Right.
You can absolutely Agreed. Have those like deeper relationships and do, you know, just still do the same thing. Like my favorite example here is what Element 14 does with their community. And so
I don't think I've heard of that one.
Oh my gosh, they're fantastic. Diane Kibbe, who's their global head of social media and community. Mm-hmm. I had her on the podcast and she also spoke at Sprint. And what Element 14 does, so the community is owned by a company called Premier Farnell, and they're a computer electronics manufacturer. And they work with people who are, you know, like engineers, like hardware engineers who are makers. They're like building things.
Mm-hmm.
And this community, it's, if you go in and look at it, I mean, it's incredible. All of these community members are in there helping each other, sharing their ideas, sharing their stories. But the community is actually a really good lead gen and revenue driver for them as well. And so it's a great example. And part of how Diane does that, we talked about this a bit in her podcast. So mm-hmm. I'll link to that in the show notes so that people can check that out.
Great.
But she's like, you know, I made it really easy when I realized people were coming to the community and, you know, they're talking about these products specifically. I just made it really easy for them to get those products from where they were. Like if someone sees this, and I mean, these – these projects that her community members work on take months and months, and they do huge write-ups. They do like YouTube videos. Like they go very, very in-depth with what they're creating because they're essentially inventing new things. But mm-hmm. she was like, if my community members are going to take the time to write all this up and other people are going to take the time to read all it, I want to make sure it's easy for them to find the materials that they need if they want to do the same thing. And mm-hmm. so that's really like the approach that she has taken with the community. And, you know, they've seen great returns from an increased revenue standpoint.
So did they create like a shop or something?
Yeah. So they have this buy now. They use the Jive platform. And it's heavily customized. But they have like a buy now button integrated all over the place. and then they also have programs when they do release new products. They actually have special community programs where they'll give away a certain amount of product to like – I don't know, maybe like 10 specific community members, but the community members have to pitch like what they're going to do with this free product and what they're going to build. And then it's like this 6-month long project. They call them a road test. And it's this project where the community member who's gotten the free sample is building with it. They're coming back in and, you know, sharing their experiences with the community. And so then now they're generating all of this word of mouth content about the product before it's even fully released to like get people excited about it as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a really, really cool case study. But that just – it just shows you that it's like that's an example of a strategy that can still build really deep relationships and do really cool things with your customers, but also still go back to the overall goal, which is to advance the business forward on the bottom line.
Yeah, that's a really great example, actually. One other thing that I often see is mixing up a bad strategy with bad execution.
Ooh, yeah. Tell me more about that.
Like, for example – Nike launched this amazing community forum in around New Year's of 2014, mm-hmm. and it did not do well. Mm-hmm. It was such a great concept, but it just – the IA of the forum wasn't really awesome. They didn't market it well. Mm-hmm. It was very confusing, and there also, I would say, to be honest, there wasn't a very clear purpose for the mm-hmm. community. Mm-hmm. So it was like a fantastic idea that could have definitely benefited Nike's pre-existing offline community programs, but that didn't translate well into a digital strategy. It came across in the project as if, you know, maybe there was 7 digital product managers working on that, all with competing objectives, and it showed. But it was such a great idea, and I think in actuality, like, I would love to see them revive that with a different tactical strategy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like that's something that's like a fantastic idea but was not well executed. And I think we need to understand when we're making execution mistakes versus strategic mistakes.
Yeah, that's huge. That's something that I know that I personally, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I don't know if I've ever stopped to think about whether or not I'm making a mistake at a strategy level or an execution level. I almost wanted to have like a whole separate conversation on that. I'm like, wait, how do you know? Like, what should you pay attention
Let
to?
Let me tell you all about my strategic mistakes.
Yeah, exactly.
All my execution mistakes.
Yeah, let's do that. That would be really – maybe I'll have, like, a show that's, like, the bloopers and we can all –
Yeah.
That would be good. Well, getting back to the topic of hand, though, of selling the value of community, what do you do, though, if you realize – because you had mentioned that, like, when we are getting to know people what do you do if you realize people, like, and when I say people, I mean like your leader, they just have like a fundamentally different perspective on community than you do. And we'd sort of talked lightly about, you know, maybe that's a situation where you walk away, but is there anything that you can do to sort of like sway, change their mind or any sort of like change management principles?
No, I don't honestly believe that you can change someone's mind on that kind of thing. If a leader does not believe that design is important or that innovation is important, there's nothing you can do to persuade them that design and innovation are important. It's something that they need to come to realize on their own is mm-hmm. a good strategy or something to be valued. Same thing is true of community. I've realized that selling community to someone who fundamentally does not believe in community is not worth my time. Yeah. And I don't think it's worth any community manager's time either. And I think the only remedy in that situation is to get out of there as soon as you can and do it gracefully.
Yeah. That's that. My mind is just like thinking.
How would you approach that?
Experiences. I mean, I go back and forth. Like, there's this part of me that I'm like the huge like optimist and I'm like, I can do this. But you do have to know when to walk away. I think it's helpful in understanding what – at what level they're fundamentally different from you, right? I think it's understanding is like, is it just a little thing where like maybe they've had a bad experience in the past and they could be swayed, or is it they fundamentally are just like, nope, people say horrible things on the internet and that's just like the way it's going to be. There's a book I read several years ago. It remains like one of my favorite books to this day. It's called Switch: How to Make Change When Change is Hard by Chip Heath and Dan Heath. And there are some things that they call out in that book in terms of like doing internal, you know, moving in towards internal change. And some of those call outs I think can apply to community if you're working with someone who's maybe on that level of the spectrum where it's like they could be persuaded. So for instance, like they have a whole entire section about focusing on the bright spot. So meaning showing examples of what is already working with what you're currently doing and showing how that applies to your project. And so I think in some cases you can, but also you do have to, you know, look at things at a bigger picture level. Is it just this one person that feels this way, but everyone else is supportive and you can work around it? Or are you in the position where you only have one or two people who are really supportive and everyone else is either like not supportive or just like doesn't think it's the right time and that sort of thing? And so there's you kind of have to look at it at the bigger picture because, you know, leaving a job is not fun. It's not painful.
Easy.
It's like ending a relationship. You feel like you failed. Right.
And I mean, also it's sometimes it's just like financially not an option to do so. Like, let's be realistic.
Yeah, that is very, very true, especially with the economy. It's like 1 month everyone's hiring, the next month no one's hiring. So there's a lot of factors you have to call into play. And so
I've had several friends in this same exact scenario where they were hired into very senior level community roles. And then either the person who hired them has left or just suddenly the company takes a different strategic direction and their role is no longer relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And they get siloed into either content roles or into like customer service roles.
Support.
Yeah. And it doesn't really enable them to be powerful or fulfill their own ambitions and live up to what they know they're able to accomplish. So it's very personally frustrating for them, but it also is frustrating in terms of the job because you're not doing everything you can do for your customers.
Yep.
And that just doesn't feel good.
Yeah, totally agree with you there. I think that one's definitely more of like a gut call. You have to, you know, no one can tell you when you should or when you shouldn't. That's just something you have to evaluate on your own. But, I mean, it does happen and it's painful.
Yeah, it's a fortunate situation.
Well, do you have any other like last like recommendations or resources that you can share related towards selling the value of communities? Like anything that you can offer that would help someone like practice or build their own confidence or anything you've done personally?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier with that analogy with graphics and design, I'm very much inspired by design when it comes to my community work. And part of that reason is because, you know, the community industry is where design was probably 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And designers have really struggled to define their craft and sell it into companies. And I would say they've done like a pretty kick-ass job.
Yeah, they have.
So whenever I'm looking for relevant business books, either about, you know, managing the client process or even actually pricing out projects, I always go to books that are about design. So one of my favorite business books is a book called Design is a Job by Mike Montero. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you should. He's very inflammatory.
Perfect. I'll link to him. Don't worry.
He wrote this book, Design is a Job, that's about how to do your job as a designer with clients. And it's a really fantastic book that basically explains to you, like, you are the expert in the situation and you're the one who needs to give strong recommendations. And it just really explains to you how to explain and it explains to you how to share your own value with other people and communicate it both in words, but also in your process.
Mm.
I think that's like very beneficial to anyone who works in community. There's also this really great podcast by a designer named Dan Mall. Dan has a design studio that I believe is called Super Friendly. And I actually saw him present at a conference a couple weeks ago called Owner Summit. Owner Summit is it's a conference for people who own digital agencies. So people like myself. And Dan did a presentation on pricing. And not only was that helpful from like a monetary perspective, understanding how to sell the value, but it's also very helpful in thinking about the how you package your value.
Mm.
And I'm not talking about like actual contract packages or biz dev packages, but how do you position and argument that is very favorable. Like, for example, there's like a quick chapter in that book, Predictably Irrational, that talks about the pricing of a newspaper and how even if it's irrationally priced, people almost always choose the second cheapest option or something along those lines. It was just like a really great book to read. And Dan has, going back to Dan Mall, he has this podcast called Schoolology where he talks about selling in creative services. Mm. And I think that's like really helpful tool for any community person.
Perfect. I will be linking to both of those. Don't worry, guys. I'm going to go download Dan's podcast right now too. He's a great resource. Thanks so much for sharing. Well, before we wrap up, I want to talk a little bit about this new project that you've got going on that I'm super excited about. Community Is. It's a great site that you're going to be launching. Can you tell everyone a little bit more about it?
Sure. Well, it's not yet live, or it actually is live, but just not public. The URL is just http://community.is. And Community Is actually started out as Loyal's newsletter just under 2 years ago. Something that we had started about a year into Loyal so that we could keep in touch with a handful of close friends and peers and clients and continuously share with them our thought process on community. And it grew kind of surprisingly. Pretty much the only way you could find it at first was by digging through our Tumblr archive and finding up a sign-up link there. But somehow people who were, for lack of a better word, like fangirls or fanboys of Loyal would find it and they'd sign up and they'd share it with their friends. Mm-hmm. And then last year we put up a little sign-up button in the header of our site and people just continued to sign up. And I was like, okay, wow. But we always knew when we started Community Is that it was going to be something a little bit more. When we took inspiration for starting the newsletter, we looked at, what 99U was to Behance and what A List Apart and A Book Apart were to HappyCog, and even what The Content Strategist is to Contently. Mm-hmm. So we had that in mind. We just didn't know when it would actually make sense to do so. And I guess now is finally that time. So Community is a brand play and a platform for Loyal. And it's for anyone who puts people at the center of their work. And I guess you'll have to wait to see what our content strategy looks like.
Ooh, well, I'm so excited about it. Just taking a poke around, even the hidden site. And I'm really excited. I've been a fan of your newsletters. I can't remember when I signed up, at some point last year. And I always find what I love so much about your newsletters is that they're so thoughtful. I know that I'm personally a person that I get stuck sometimes in the weeds and I'm very like tactical and very like execution driven and focused. And it can be really hard for me to kind of like pull back a little bit and see a bigger scope of everything else that's going on. And I just think you do a beautiful job of recapping how all these different elements of not just the business world, but like the world in general can fit into what we're all doing as community builders. So you've done an excellent job with those newsletters. Highly recommend everyone sign up for them. And then once Community
Is, I appreciate that.
Yeah. And once Community Is publicly available, I'm sure it's going to just be an amazing success. So
I hope so. We put a lot of effort into it. And I think my favorite part of the site is actually the branding and the custom illustration work that we've done for it. Yeah. So I'm excited to see how people react to that.
Well, I'm sure it'll be great. So, all right. Well, we're actually over time for the day. Wow. But it's perfect because we had such a good conversation. But thank you so much for joining us, Sarah. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Everyone else out there. Love the conversation as well. Again, communitygeek.com/podcast is where I post the recap and the show notes, and I'll include links to the resources that Sarah and I shared today. And then don't forget, we've got Sprint Europe coming up in London, February 24th, 25th. Would love to see you all there if you can make it. And thank you so much for joining us. I hope everyone enjoys the rest of their week, and we will see you next week.